Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with Eric Schieffer as we talk about emotionally charged learning. We're talking about artificial intelligence as well and just how far it has gone and how far it will go. We'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Eric Schieffer with us this hour. His website, ericschieffer.com, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Eric, before we take calls, you were talking about Snapchat, which is the video way for people, and the sender sends it based on a certain length of time, 7 seconds, 14, then it self-destructs basically and disappears. How does Snapchat make money?
Well, right now they are not making money. They're building a user experience, and much like other companies before it, started with the user experience, so it's a good model. They're extremely well-funded. They have big investors, largely out of Asia, and so right now they don't need to, but they've started doing pilot programs with advertising, and where they will monetize will be placing ads alongside these different video experiences. Kids love it because, as I was saying before the break, you have an opportunity to be yourself. You can let your hair down. Most social media experiences are overly curated. It's like you're your own public relations expert. And so this eliminates that process. You're almost, you know, encouraged to give something that is unrehearsed, real time. And so kids are doing this in the hundreds back and forth each day. And it allows people to connect at a deeper emotional level because you're getting all those emotional cues. I mean, it's not just a two-dimensional picture with no movement. You're getting, sure, a two-dimensional video, but you've got all these different cues that are associated, and it's longer. So it's a hit amongst that generation. I believe you're going to see a lot of business applications that will come arising from that same technology. Facebook has tried to buy it. They don't want to sell. Facebook recognizes that they need to stay relevant, and they're not interested.
No general revenue at this point, and they probably turned down offer for what? A few billion dollars?
Oh, easily.
Unbelievable. I would have taken it and run, Eric.
Well, they recognize that this could be, you know, much larger. It could be in the 10, maybe 20 billion.
God, once you have 1 billion, what do you need 10 for, right?
Taxes.
It is truly amazing. And I know all my grandchildren use it. They love it. You know, they go back and forth with it. And they have fun doing it. My granddaughter, you know, rescued a little puppy from the Humane Society. And she, you know, the world knows about this little puppy now because she sends it to all her friends. I mean,
very cute,
you know, and it is truly amazing. But in terms of its ability to generate revenue, and I know you know the digital world, do people really buy things digitally or do they just look at it and move on to something else?
Oh, they're buying it in tremendous amounts, more than ever. And you've got a company like Amazon that is leading the way, and then many vertically oriented companies that focus, like a Zappos, initially in shoes and have moved into other areas, and then companies that were focused on just like soaps, like soap.com, that Amazon purchased because they were so strong in just that one vertical. The amount of money that is being purchased online is staggering. The hacks that we read about, including the Russian one that we mentioned, and you had noted the $1.2 billion, you know, that were affected. This is not slowing people down in any measurable way. They recognize that they can get what they want, specifically in as arcane as it may be, delivered on demand. Many of these services are now doing same day, or you can go to the stores to pick them up. So it's not slowing down. It's the way people are oriented today. They want it fast, and they want the detailed specificity, which is great. Like, you know, I have a friend that owns straightrazors.com, and, you know, this is a specialized niche, and he does incredibly well for what is a vintage item. And he's got a huge audience
How do
that he
they
reached.
find him, Eric? How do they know where to find the guy?
Well, they start with a search. So they may go to Bing or Yahoo or Google, the monster of searches, and type it in. And he advertises, and then he also optimizes, his website so that it's more easily found. And, he's got this niche audience from around the world that happens to like the old vintage straight razors.
Oh, yeah, lots of people do. Now, how does he buy his way up the ladder on search engines? How do you do that?
Well, you use a service, that is specialized in doing this. And digital marketing does this. This is what we do. And we assist with white hat techniques to make that happen that will allow your site to, with the right content that is attractive to Google, move up the ladder and to be relevant for the key terms that matter for your space. And then we work with your site to ensure with data capturing what a user experiences when they're on the site, where they traverse, and we do way and implement technologies that reduce the exit flow and increase conversion, meaning that people are buying. And a lot of this is testing. So we can literally monitor where people go, and then we look at heat maps where they're going, and then test against new suppositions about what would work versus what is already in existence. And this really improves both the user experience and it also improves revenue.
Yeah, it does. It's truly amazing. I mean, it seems to be going so fast, and you really have to be on the first page of a search engine, don't you, to get some recognition?
Well, to get recognition, if you don't already have a brand, you really do, unless you've you're in a very competitive niche where people do their homework, but first page is going to be the majority of the traffic. But social is another big place. So people that are on Twitter or have big followings or Facebook that have big followings, those areas can be equally capital efficient from a advertising perspective. And what is advertising? I mean, it's a two-step process. First, you got to capture attention. And so you want to be where people already are. And then you need to, once you capture their attention, mobilize them emotionally to take some action. And that's just getting them to pick up the phone or getting them to go to the site. And so when you have such tremendous numbers of people that are on Facebook or they're on Instagram or they're on Twitter, you don't want to ignore those either. The searches that are intent-based with Google are still likely the best because people, if they're searching a specific phrase, the probabilities that they have an intent to buy are high. However, with Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, they also are liking specific topic areas or writing about specific topic areas. And so there is an increased probability that they're interested in what you have as well. And there are things that you can do, again, through digitalmarketing.com and other forms of digital marketing that other companies do that can capture the attention of those people and then move them emotionally into your site or to your offer, to the direction you want. And then it's all about what you do once they're there.
Exactly. Let's go to the phones. David, truck driving in California. Welcome to Coast, David. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Great show.
Thank you,
George.
David.
Been
sure
waiting
thing.
On one of these. My question to our guest here is, when you refer to a cortex, are we still talking about, in today's terms, sort of off the shelf, a sort of mathematical marionette? I mean, I've sort of been messing around with this since the 80s, back in the day, but now it seems that you can sort of fool some of the people some of the time, but if you sort of understand it, still seems quite a bit hollow. It can form ideas based on what it already knows, but there's no real creativity there like we have.
Well, these are good questions. Let's look a little bit deeper in terms of what's happening right now with the whole concept of the neocortex Musk's company, for instance, is building a program, as I mentioned earlier, that attempts to mimic it. And for people that don't know, the neocortex is the top layer of the cerebral hemisphere in the brain of all mammals. It's about 3 millimeters thick, has about 6 layers, and they're each involved with various functions. These include sensory, so sensory perception, spatial reasoning, conscious thought, language with people. And so the concept is, yes, to begin to include sensory perception, spatial reasoning, conscious thought, certainly language, and creativity is a byproduct of all of these. And so how do you get there? Well, you begin to model different thinkers. So if you're studying and you're replicating conscious thought, and you may take an objective experience and then input data that comes from 10 minds who have commented or made annotations about that experience publicly or through writings. And so the computer can begin to get different models of the world and different options about how it alters its perception of what may be an objective experience and begins the infancy of what would be creative thought. And, you know, and so Steve Jobs had mentioned that, you know, creativity, and I'm paraphrasing, is a combination of, you know, the reconnection of several dots, you know, and just connecting dots in a different way. And so the genesis of all of it is to get all the dots on the board. And so these things are coming. Some already exist right now. When we're talking about creativity that would be at that kind of a heightened level, it absolutely would include mapping the brains of some of the, our greatest creative minds, of which the belief systems and many what I would consider to be complex equivalency, cause-effect belief structures, linguistically, they're already in writing. I mean, they already exist in interviews. That data just needs to be codified.
Is government, Eric, getting involved in any controls with the people with the internet in terms of acquisitions? Because, you know, if this were corporate America, the Federal Trade Commission would be jumping all over various things. You know, for example, if General Motors wanted to buy out Ford and, you know, Fiat and everybody else, you know, there'd be some restrictions there. I don't see this happening in the internet world. They seem to be buying whatever they want.
Yeah, there is not a governing body at this point that is thinking about those types of things have made any material intervention yet. I think part of it is that they don't fully understand at all. In other words, these organizations were set up looking at things through a different set of prisms and how businesses were structured. I know that, internally there are ethics boards that exist both on the work of artificial intelligence and likely on the types of acquisitions. I mean, Google has set up their own ethics board in artificial intelligence. And they recently bought Deep Minds, which is this British firm that creates software that helps computers think like humans. But the government hasn't fully caught up to these components, and that's not except in the area of defense. Now, defense with DARPA and some of these other programs are actively investing, and they see and get the implications, and they get the implications for our national security. And we certainly don't want to lose the arms race as it relates to superintelligence, because we may never know we lost it. This is an area that we must continue to invest in a strong way.
We'll go to Tristan in Aberdeen, New Jersey. Hi, Tristan. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
It was maybe 20, 30 minutes ago. Your guest, Eric, had mentioned how we're maybe 5 to 10 years away from singularity. I was just wondering how exactly he came by those figures. I've done a lot of research into singularity myself, and the two common thoughts seem to be that it'll either be a mass linking of cybernetics or a mass psychic awareness. And I try to keep up on both of these topics, and I don't see how we're 5 to 10 years away from that.
Well, I think what I was mentioning is that Kurzweil had predicted, you know, somewhere close to 20 years, and this was 2-3 years ago. The research that we're doing suggests that it likely will happen far sooner than that, but no one knows. Okay, I mean these are all probabilities, and it's based upon both public and private data. And then also our own data that we work on. We certainly have been experimenting with artificial intelligence within our own organizations. But this is, and then the question is, you know, what is really singularity, and how do we really define that? I mean, I understand the broad stroke definition, but there's arguably going to be, I consider to be vertical oriented areas of it. You know, I think what Kurzweil was talking about was a much grander version versus the vertical-oriented, you know, forms.
Next up, we go to Daniel in California. Hi, Daniel. Take it away.
Oh, hi. The movie, Forbidden Planet, from the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Right. I just want to remind everybody that everybody ought to go see it again. I think it's really very prophetic to what we're talking about today. And I think what's really worthwhile in the movie is the conclusion. This is a movie that really, really comes to a conclusion and kind of wraps up its prophecy, so to speak, and talks about the creature of the id. So that implies the unconscious and how the unconscious does indeed affect us every moment. So it's a really good movie, and I think it'll stimulate a lot of thought.
Well, good thoughts. It is. It's one of those old-time classics. Eric, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to come back with final phone calls as we talk about artificial intelligence and also his book, Emotionally Charged Learning, bestseller out there. Been around for a while, but it's still available to you. And if you need to email me, let's make it easy for you. George@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Eric, where do we stand as a nation compared to other nations with artificial intelligence?
The leader. You know, in my opinion, there's really no one that is close. And it is going on all around us right now. I mean, on a perhaps minor level of whether if you decide to do a Google search, for instance, I mean, it's artificial intelligence on a lesser degree, an iPhone, you know, responding to your voice, Amazon suggesting a book. So, you know, there's AI already can beat most of our top people at chess repeatedly, Jeopardy, even sensible driving. I think, you know, you could make an argument for AI winning, and that's why I am, and others. I mean, you look at Musk, who's warned that it could be more dangerous than nukes, or Hawking's calling it potentially the best or the worst thing to happen to humanity in history. I don't think any of us, or any people, or any of them, are crazy. I think we're just alarmed about the potential, and that we need to have an awareness and a plan, and to be sure that it doesn't get out of control. You can have certainly a moral structure that can be encoded, deontic logic, which is like the logic of permission and obligation applied to systems across the board. There can be some type of a International Atomic Energy Agency model here, where I think researchers in the field would devise some type of commonly accepted guideline for experimenting with AI and for the programming of AI. And because, you know, I think without the proper constraints and what may come, it's a technology that could resemble Frankenstein's monster. It's huge. You're talking unpredictable and very different from what many of the software creators who have written these applications had in mind.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We go to Kevin in Willis, Texas. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My question with the AI in the next 20, 25 years as it advances with robots, what do you see as far as the impact on space exploration, such as going to Mars or to Saturn's moon, Titan, or to other planets? And I'll take my call off the air.
All right. Thank you.
I think it will speed up the process in many ways, because you're talking about being able to leverage that intelligence for the manufacturing and the creation of better systems to get there. You have the ability to, also determine ways in which to set up, stations that could be more efficient and effective. I think it will speed up the process overall.
Let's go to John, truck driving somewhere in California on the 405, I guess. Hey, John, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on my way back to Long Beach. But anyway, I wanted to say real quick, I used to hang out in Long Beach at a place called the Acapulco Inn. It also was called the AI. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, there was plenty of artificial intelligence going on around. but anyway, this made me think of that. I wanted to ask you about Facebook, just to expand a little bit. About, you know, it used to be the model for making a successful corporation was a lot slower. And, you know, just using U.S. Steel or something, or Procter & Gamble as an example, it took them 20, 30 years to build. And then, you know, they got the time that they're at the top, the apogee was a lot longer. You know, it wasn't as immediate, but it lasted longer. And then, you know, and then companies like in my hometown, Ames Shovel went out of business. It was 200 years before it went out of business. But in today's world, it's so more immediate and so more utilitarian. That I wonder if Facebook's demise isn't almost inevitable based on just on that curve that inevitably happens, but it's so fast the way things grow. They started in 2004 and they're a household name by 2008. You know how that goes. Is there a way? What I said to your guy, and I'll get off this tangent for a second. I mean, in a second, but. My kids don't like to be on Facebook because they think it's the opposite of MySpace. They think it's creepy to be, be there with their parents, right? And no matter all the moves they make, do you think that the model for a success, in these kind of companies, Facebook, whoever, is there a doom inevitable just a lot quicker because all corporations eventually reach that way? That's my question.
All right. Thank you.
I understand. I would agree with you. I think that whenever you are hanging out with your grandmother, it's not going to be the coolest situation if you're trying to influence the opposite sex or you're hanging with your friends. And that is exactly what is beginning to occur. Facebook knows this. They are absolutely aware of it. They tried to and did successfully buy Instagram. They have made big investments into virtual reality with Oculus, which is really one of the first true examples of how virtual reality was intended. And what's their purpose? Why do they want something like this? Well, I want you to imagine that you can attend the Super Bowl next year by putting on an Oculus, and they have the front row seat at the Super Bowl, and you can now watch it. You can turn around. You can be there at the game. And not only that, but you can the seat to your right and seat to your left are your best friends. That's the premise of where they're going. These peak experiences, these joint experiences that typically would be very difficult or very expensive for the average person to attend are going to be accessible. Concerts to one-on-ones with celebrities to even potentially, seeing top therapist. It's interesting. My girlfriend, who has a show, it's couples therapy with Dr. Jen on VH1. I think starting, September 10th, and there's a reunion show the 3rd. We were joking that this is an opportunity for people that might be in China to have a great therapeutic experience. And then there's the flip side of that, which is what do you do when you have artificial intelligence? that can analyze people as good or better using, you know, emotional intelligence related cues and some of the best techniques of cognitive therapy. Think about the benefits to mankind there, where you can have a therapist with you 24/7. Maybe it has the technology and the licensing rights of a Dr. Jen, and then instead of having that applied like she does with so many top celebrities, she can apply that technology to the someone that may need the help in Canada, or they may need the help in California. And so this is the great side of artificial intelligence, the opportunity to enhance mankind, enhance society, make us collectively more intelligent. We just need a moral compass to it, and some type of logic that is agreed upon and put in place and monitored by our best scientific minds. And you know, the great thing is that so many of the people that are listening tonight understand this and can work towards that in their own way and have the influence. And that's really what I want to bring to the table, which is to make us all aware of this and so that we use it in the best way and we don't let it slip out of our hands, so that the future generations don't have to deal with the mess.
Good point. Okay, we go to Ferris in North Carolina. Ferris, it's your turn. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great,
I just have
Ferris.
A couple of comments. One, talking about the social media. Now, with these apps, most of them, majority of them are free. Anybody could just download it. And whenever you agree to it, reveals certain information, you agree to the terms and the conditions, then if these companies aren't really making money at this point, they're just trying to build the user base to build the clientele. Isn't that pretty much just a sale of data from one company to another? Because I don't really see these social medias really making money in marketing that much as far as advertisements and things like that. And everybody normally just disregards that anyway. You know, sometimes they might have to even pay extra for a certain application to not have that come up or pop up in their feed. And then as far as the artificial intelligence, it could be a great benefit, but the only issue with that is the ones pushing the money to attain that intelligence are most likely going to use it to make more money. For example, you're talking about the Super Bowl experience. I'm sure there'll be a nice fee for that, to where maybe it could be beneficial in a different way, to where middle-class America, for example, can attain the technologies and the advancements of today.
To where react to just a little bit of that, Eric. Go ahead.
Well, I think there are good points. The first point is, how are these social media applications and platforms monetizing themselves? And many apps are free, and the way they make money is multiple ways. One is they make money through beginning to serve up advertising. And so you may see in the bottom corners, and so when they get to a certain level of traction, those ads can be monetized at a higher level. The other way they do it is access. So you get involved, you get hooked to playing or using it, and then to upgrade or to get either, let's say it's a photo app, to get more filters to use, it will cost you extra money. And then also they do begin to sell access to traffic. So again, in the form of advertising, and they can transfer traffic over from that application to another application. On the other question, if it's in the wrong hands, that has other significant implications. The ability to manipulate markets. I mean, if you have a system that's so smart, it can outthink and perhaps outsmart some of the latest marketplaces and influence other systems that are within the realm of what we consider to be social engineering, and for monetary purposes. Again, it all needs to be respectfully looked at, without government regulation per se, but oversight of some level that's mature, that's adult, and that considers implications beyond just the next year or two that looks at the implications of this over decades and begins to run simulations and begins to consider what is needed. And my argument is there needs to be a moral system. There needs to be some type of logic that is encoded that is required to ensure that it doesn't get out of hand.
You know, Murdoch bought MySpace. It was a disastrous purchase. How could they go wrong with something like that, Eric? How could they misjudge that?
Same reason that Facebook is dealing with today. It was an issue of generation. You had kids that were loving it, that were using it, and then suddenly their parents got on and their grandparents got on. And they were doing it in a way to express themselves, but now they're there with mom and dad, and they're there with grandpa. And it wasn't cool anymore. It became the uncool thing to be involved. And Facebook is dealing with the same problem. And so if you look at millennials don't use Facebook as much for many reasons. Interesting enough, for the purposes of ensuring that for posterity, they don't have this digital set of histories that exist. They see that their older brothers and sisters have been negatively impacted because of their online reputation. They don't want to have to spend tens of thousands of dollars with a company like reputationmanagementconsultants.com, the one I mentioned, or others. They prefer to just be proactive, and there's a lot of logic in that. And so with Snapchat, they know that at minimum it's going to disappear. And they also, I think, are less interested in the perfect image. It's sort of a turnoff to many of them. The perfect selfie, the perfect, curated profile. They want much more genuine, much more real.
What's the demographics that Facebook goes after?
Well, look, the demographic is birth till death. I mean, that's what they love to go after.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Reality is they're playing at in a field that's more Gen X and baby boomer. That's, with some silent generation that still are on the hip end, that are early adopters that like to stay young.
In your opinion, Eric, what demographic buys off things on the internet?
Largely Gen Y, which would be this millennial Gen X and the baby boomer generation. I mean, the sweet spot is in that 30 to 50 range. And you're talking in the tens of billions of dollars.
We sure are. Al is in Opelousas, Louisiana. Al, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Eric. Listen, I'd just like to tell you guys about this show on NPR that I heard. It's called Radio Lab. It's a weekly show, and a few weeks ago there was a segment on one of the episodes where this musician, he was a classical composer, and he analyzed all the rules of classical composition and put them into a fairly simple program, and with no fancy equipment or anything, he had it create some classical music in a particular style. And, I love classical music, but I'm very picky about composers and compositions. And this was excellent. When I heard it, I just said, oh, I got to have some of this. So you guys might want to check that out. And I really recommend this show Radio Lab on NPR. It covers all kind of scientific research topics, and it's just consistently excellent.
Yeah, they're doing some. You too. They're doing some interesting things. There are only a few more minutes to go here, Eric. For people who want to pick up your book that you had out some time ago, Emotionally Charged Learning, can they get it off of Amazon? And
that book's been. I believe they can still get it off Amazon. My new book that's coming out later in the year is called Build. And I believe that if you're interested in artificial intelligence, if you're interested in online business development and how to make a business be more successful online and how to use all these technologies and do it in a way that gives you more free time, that would be of the most interest to you. And that'll be coming out soon. It's called Build, and it's really the 7 strategies on how to scale and grow your business and live free at the same time.
Indeed, indeed. And as we wane through the moments, what do you see as the next major artificial intelligence creation? What's out there? The car that drives itself? What?
Well, for sure that's coming. And, yeah, I mean, that's already in existence now. I mean, they're in trials. California will be, you'll see this in scale very soon. The next big thing will be a combination of what I would consider to be applications that are on your phone that begin to plan your day in a far more concise and better way. Applications that can tell you about things in your environment that really understand you at a far deeper level than perhaps just downloading your Facebook profile and all the different choices you've made. These are the things that are coming that are going to make your life richer and have better quality and more meaning.
Exciting. Thanks a lot, Eric. Appreciate it. Good luck to everything you do. When I come back, ancient anomalies. We're going exploring on Coast to Coast AM.